Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened, a weekly history podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season. Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that people were rioting and cutting up tobacco on farms all over Virginia to try and make it so that there would be less tobacco. The idea was to raise the price of tobacco by making it rarer. The government was no help in this, so the people took the matter into their own hands. Their governor, Governor Culpeper, wasn't helpful at all. He actually encouraged more tobacco growing and reported to the king that England, the king, and he himself would all make a ton of money from all the tobacco growing now. The people were the last care on his mind. But the king knew Governor Culpeper was ineffective as a governor and wasn't really a great choice. So he fired Governor Culpeper and chose a new man to be the governor. This was Governor Howard. So we're still only 7 years or so after Bacon's rebellion had ended when Governor Howard arrived in Virginia. Upon his arrival, he was almost immediately thrown into arguments with the assembly. First came the issue of whether the assembly had the right to hear appeals from court cases. This right had remained in the hands of the assembly for many years and was considered to be a way the people had a voice in their own justice. They could elect people who would later hear their appeals. But the new governor had arrived with orders from the king stating that the assembly was no longer able to have this right. The king's advisors had convinced him that the assembly's power to hear appeals was the source of some of its arrogance. Basically, this power was making their ego too big, and this was part of why they felt they could disobey some of the king's orders. So the king took the power away from them. Remember that Governor Culpeper had arrived in Virginia with the same orders, but being completely full of himself and way too busy with his money-making schemes, he didn't really enforce it. He did at one point write to the king telling him that he hasn't allowed any appeals to go to the assembly. But it was a much weaker way of going about this than just straight up telling the assembly that they no longer had this right at all. Governor Howard was a much tougher, sterner man than Governor Culpeper was. He was a fierce defender of the king, and he wasn't afraid to say it. So, shortly after his arrival to Virginia, he stood before the assembly and made it clear that the king ordered the right to hear appeals to be taken away from the assembly, and that in no way, shape, or form will they be hearing any appeals from now on. The assembly was really upset about this. From now on, appeals of court cases would be heard by judges who were chosen by the governor. The judges couldn't be relied on to make fair judgments because they had to answer to the governor, not to the people. As they had seen before with Governor Berkeley, people appointed by the governor usually do whatever the governor tells them to do. The assembly themselves behaved this way when the elections were rigged to choose only those the governors wanted to be chosen. So they knew that this was the way it would work. Anyone who didn't have to answer to the people couldn't really be relied on by the people. The assembly requested that the governor join them in sending a letter to the king asking him to change his mind. Governor Howard told them that the king was quite happy with his orders the way they were, so no thanks, I won't be joining you in your letter to him. The assembly went ahead with the letter anyways. In it, they didn't just ask for the right to hear appeals. They went a step further and also declared that the king had no right to change their laws at all. In the past, the king had in fact canceled some of the assembly's laws and made some of his own laws. But now the assembly was stating that he didn't have the ability to do this. So they kindly, in the most respectful way possible, reject his order to take away the right to hear appeals. Now here's where the real issue begins. It was bad enough that the governor was going along with the king and refusing to side with them, but now Governor Howard, in his feelings that the letter would upset the king, withheld the letter and wouldn't allow it to even leave Virginia. The assembly was outraged at the governor's own arrogance, so they wrote the letter again, in secret, and in secret they sent the letter with two assembly members who traveled to England with it. When the letter got there, the king's advisors weren't impressed. The king wrote to Governor Howard telling him that he had heard about this secret letter given to his advisors by unknown people. He had heard that Governor Howard had withheld the official letter and basically told the governor that he had done the right thing by refusing to send the letter. In addition to that, the king also ordered Governor Howard to punish the men who had delivered the letter. After that, the two assembly members who had sailed to England with the letter in secret were kicked out of the assembly and all other employment that they held. Roughly 2 years later, King Charles II died, and his brother, King James II, now sat on the throne. James II was a good king, or a bad king, depending on who you ask. But in regards to Virginia, he was more good than he was bad. And this was a great stroke of luck for the assembly, because the year that James II became king, another issue arose in the assembly. One that's always caused great debates and violent rebellion. The issue of taxes. The issue had its beginning on the rent people were supposed to pay to the king. Everyone who had a house on any land in Virginia was supposed to pay a tax for using the land. The tax would go to the king or various other people that had rights to it. For almost the entirety of Virginia's existence, the collection of this rent had been too difficult and unpopular to go through with. So generations of people were used to not paying this tax at all. Now the king was insisting that it be paid. The assembly argued that people simply didn't have the money to pay this rent, especially with the rampant poverty caused by the king's laws forbidding trade with other countries. Paying this rent would ruin people. The real issue wasn't just having to pay the land rent. It was that real money, coins, was extremely rare in the colonies, so all taxes and rent and the like was paid in tobacco. The government would then take the tobacco and sell it, and that's how the government got paid its tax money. The law stating that people had to pay this land rent was written decades before this. In that law, it stated how much each pound of tobacco was worth, and therefore how many pounds of tobacco each person had to pay in order to pay the tax. Now, tobacco was nearly worthless, not even close to what it was worth when the law was written. People were allowed to pay tobacco as though it were still worth a lot of money. But if the king tried to sell this tobacco, he would get nearly nothing for it. What he wanted was what he felt he was owed. So he ordered the governor to stop collecting payments in tobacco and start collecting payments in actual coins. Setting aside the fact that actual coins were almost impossible for the people to get their hands on, coins were worth a lot more than tobacco. People would have to pay four times as much tobacco for a coin than they would if they were just paying in tobacco. Look at it this way. Let's say you pay your mortgage or your rent in dollar bills, and each month you pay $4,000. Now, the government suddenly comes in and says that they need more money, and that they believe you should be paying more. On top of that, they tell you that you now have to pay your mortgage or rent in solid gold bars, and that you can't split the gold bars up. Each gold bar costs $16,000. So now your monthly payment is $16,000, not $4,000. It would be almost impossible to buy a gold bar every month and pay far above what you normally had been paying. The assembly refused to write the idea that you have to pay in actual coins into a law. They asked the governor to stop this and allow the old arrangement to continue. The king wasn't very happy with their refusal once again to obey his orders. Who did these assemblymen think they were? So the king declared the old law gone and the new law requiring actual coins to be the current law. The assembly was even more outraged than before. The king was asking something of them that would not only ruin everyone, it would actually be impossible to do. Money just wasn't present in the colony. On top of that, the king was making and canceling laws as though he had power to overrule the assembly, and to this, the assembly would not agree. They refused to obey any part of these orders. They were so disagreeable to it that Governor Howard was finally forced to make a compromise. In the compromise, they agreed that the rent and taxes would continue to be collected in tobacco, but at double the amount. This meant that after all of that, the people were in the same condition they were before, except now they had to pay double what they were paying. This was especially hard on the people as the level of poverty was still extreme and widespread. If this weren't enough to ignite a fire between the assembly and the governor, there was another issue at play that caused almost as much bitter anger and disagreements. This is the issue of ports. Ports are where the ships come in and go out of the colony. From the time of Virginia's first settlement nearly 100 years before this to now, the question of where ships came and went was a matter of what the captain felt like that day, or what he was used to doing. Usually, it was private docks that ships anchored in. This may not seem like it's related to the revolution and the struggles of government, but just stick with me here. The issue started with the fact that the colony had rivers and areas that touched water everywhere. This meant that it was hard to enforce trade laws and hard to catch anyone smuggling anything illegal. It also meant that it was hard to properly collect taxes. If Captain John was pulling a ship into the private dock of Mr. Wilson, who would even know that Captain John had been there at all? To counter this chaos, the government wanted to make it so that all ships coming into and going out of the colony had to do so at official government docks. This wasn't a new issue. Over the course of the previous 100 years, attempts had been made to make this happen, but they had all failed. The private dock system was better for the colonists who received items from the ships at his doorstep, and better for the traders on the ships who could deliver their supplies directly to the people without having to deal with a middleman. However, the assembly considered it to be a wild, rambling way of life. Several years before this, Governor Culpeper had been ordered to create a system of official docks, one that didn't end up working out. A couple of years after that, the assembly ordered a town in every county to create an official port for the coming and going of ships. But when the ships arrived, they found there were no buildings set up where they could keep their items safe from the elements. So the ships continued in the old way of using private docks. Eventually, some of the people were prosecuted for returning to the old way. This angered the people so much that the king was forced to put a pause on the law, and people were allowed to return to the private dock system. In the meantime, a compromise was made. All right, so stick with me here. The elected side of the assembly wrote a law and sent it to the governor's council side of the assembly to sign. The council side agreed, but made some changes and sent it back to the elected side. The elected side agreed to these changes and added some of their own changes, and then sent it back to the council side to sign. The council, once again, agreed to this and also added a few changes. Then they sent it back to the elected side, and this is where it gets weird. When it came back to the elected side, this time something different happened. The record keeper, that very same one we discussed in previous episodes that was the hero of the people and had been in prison for 2 years, well, that record keeper decided to do a little something on his own. He went into the documents and removed a paper containing one of the changes the council side had placed there. So when the elected side read through it, they agreed to everything, not knowing that part of it had been removed. The council side had thought that the elected side agreed to this removed part, and everything was set up for a perfect explosion of misunderstanding. When it reached the governor's desk to sign into law, he read it through and noticed the part that was missing. His council had put it there, so he had been well aware of its existence, and now he saw that it was gone. So he refused to sign it. The assembly claimed that even though they didn't notice part of the law had been removed when it was agreed to, it had been agreed to by both parts of the assembly, and therefore it had the power of the law. All they needed was the governor to sign it. The governor did have the power to refuse to sign it, but he didn't have the power to declare that the law agreed to in the assembly should be changed in any way. Only the king and the assembly had this power. So Governor Howard claimed that he could do this because he was the voice of the king. The assembly strongly rejected this. They said that it basically gave the governor double powers, and they wouldn't accept this in any way. The assembly refused to back down, and Governor Howard likewise refused to budge. The assembly further protested this by refusing to set aside the normal money to pay for public things like police, judges, streets, bridges, and jails. The governor reacted in his own protest and wrote to the king asking him to dismiss the entire assembly. Governor Howard himself had the power to do this, but he told the king that it would be much more of a wound to the assembly if the king were the one to do it. So, shortly after the letter was received, the king sent an order dismissing the entire assembly. With what was probably great pleasure, Governor Howard had the order read aloud to the assembly. He told them that they were the first assembly to be dismissed this way, and he hoped they would be the last to deserve it. He also ordered copies of the king's dismissal of the assembly to be taken to the courts in every county, so the people could know how displeased the king was with them. The assembly no longer had the ability to gather in any official way and had to go home. The governor then declared that he wouldn't call the assembly together as often in the future. Okay, now back to the assembly's record keeper. The king ordered that he be fired and that from now on, the governor, not the assembly, would choose the record keeper. This made some sense, seeing as such a position where one could take out entire parts of laws without anyone noticing required a person that could be trusted. The problem with this was that it would be a person that the king and the governor would trust. The assembly members strongly protested this. The record keeper had to be a person the assembly trusted and felt comfortable around. The record keeper recorded all of the things said and done in their meetings. Sometimes these meetings had to be kept secret so people could speak freely. Sometimes they discussed things the governor was doing and how the assembly should respond to him. At times, the governor was outright tyrannical and acted against the interests of the assembly and the people. The assembly had to feel as though they absolutely trusted the record keeper to not report back to the governor things that were meant to be kept secret. They said that if the governor chose the record keeper, they would feel as though their record keeper were a spy working for the governor in their midst. However, they knew that the king had the right to give this power to the governor, and so they agreed. But they required the record keeper to take an oath of secrecy. To this, Governor Howard agreed, and all seemed settled for the moment. The assembly was no longer the puppet of the governor as they had been when Governor Berkeley was in charge. But they had been stripped of many of their previous rights. They no longer had the power to choose their own record keeper. The governor had used double power by claiming that one of his votes was from him and his other vote was from the king. The assembly had been dismissed by the king when they protested this, and the assembly had also lost the right to hear the appeals from court cases. And things only got more intense with the governor from here. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss the escalating tensions between the assembly and the governor, the removal of Governor Howard, and the glorious revolution in England that changed the way it treated Virginia. Subscribe so you don't miss the next episode, and comment your thoughts on this episode below. See you next time on Why Wars Happened.